All right, fellas. So last night was a bit of a letdown. Kentucky lost to Florida. They are now 2-1 on the season, 3 games in. Keith, we'll start with you. On a scale of 1 to 5, your level of frustration, 5 being the highest, what would you say you're rated right now?
Well, my knee jerk is a 5, but it's more like a 4, only because, we are to be mad about losing to Florida when we had a drive to possibly win it is a huge step forward from where we used to be. But it's so frustrating because we should have won that game. It's like we let one slip away. That's what is the most frustrating part to me. It's not the fact that we actually lost. It's the fact that we let it slip away and made too many unforced errors, and we shouldn't have.
Yeah, James, what about you?
Probably at a 4, just because I really feel good about what the defense did. I think defensively the team's ahead of schedule. We thought there'd be a little bit of letoff with the exit of Dupree and Za'Darius to the NFL, but the defense is playing really well, particularly that secondary is really a strength on the team. The offense is that's 3 weeks where we've just had periods of nothingness, where nothing's getting accomplished. The ball's stagnant; it's not moving. It's a 4. It's not a 5, just because, like Keith said, we were in that game. They capitalized on our mistakes. We didn't capitalize on the mistakes they made enough. So we're right there. If we would have got blown out, it'd been a 5. But it's at a 4 just because I think we should have and could have beat Florida, just if not for a stagnant offense and mistakes.
Yeah, so speaking of the offense, this is a good segue. I mean, I have a little bit of egg on my face at this point. I thought, starting going back to the spring, that the offense would actually be the strength of the team. I just thought all the returning guys that they would work out the kinks and play well early on. And looking at the ratings, Kentucky's 11th in total offense in the SEC, only ahead of South Carolina, Auburn, and Missouri. So, I guess, James, do you think the offense is playing poorly because the strength of schedule? Or are there real issues?
I don't think it's the strength of schedule. I think there's some real issues. For starters, the offensive line has at times not played well, particularly last night. Now, they were going up against one of the better defensive fronts they might play all season in Florida. That's a top-notch defense. Our tackles got abused all night long. Too many drop passes by receivers. Dorian Baker in particular, dropped a touchdown pass. He dropped a couple more passes. They're just really not involved in the game last night. The running backs, to me, have been the lone bright spot on offense. Honestly, I think if they had even some more holes opened up for them, they could do even better. And Toles has just been extremely inconsistent. It's not all his fault. A lot of fans took to Toles bashing last night, which I thought was ridiculous. He did miss some throws, but at the same time, if he's not getting any time to pass the ball, and his receivers are dropping balls in their hands, then what else he's supposed to do? So it's a combination of things, and it was just kind of a failure to launch. I've just been very disappointed in the offense. I was like you, Will. I was more worried about the defense than I was the offense, and now it's just the script's been flipped. The defense is the strength of the team. The offense is trying to find an identity.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. Keith, what about you? What are some of the issues you see in for the offense?
Well, I'm with James. It's definitely not the strength of schedule. I mean, Eastern Carolina threw for 350 against Florida, and we threw for 100, literally like 140 yards or 26 yards or something. So it's not the strength of schedule. I think the number one problem is we have a new offensive coordinator who is learning on the job. If you look at the first game, he went vertical, 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 looked great. They adjusted. We didn't adjust. Go to South Carolina. We dominate the run. They adjust. We don't adjust. And last night, I really don't know what was going on. for an air raid team, we are in an inverted wishbone with two receivers and the other two guys in the backfield blocking more than any air raid team I've ever seen, and we went six quarters without scoring a touchdown. I don't understand the stagnancy, if that's even a word. I don't get it. I mean, if we are going to be an attacking vertical team, why aren't we attacking vertical? We haven't attacked vertical since the first half of the first game. And when we did vertical last night, you know, Bidette had a big catch. Baker should have had the touchdown deep. I'm frustrated with that, number one. Number two, it's Patrick. I'm not going to bash the kid. I love him. I think he could be a great face of the program. But I think it's time to give Barker some work. I'm not saying bench holes, not at all. But I feel like we need to explore if there's something there to at least have a counterpoint to Patrick when he's struggling. You know, his last seven games, he's thrown five touchdowns, nine interceptions. It's just, I think he struggles with stepping up into the pocket. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to bail out our tackles because they got fried. Jordan Swindle's been not even, you know, we thought he was going to be an all-SEC tackle. He's not even all-Kentucky. He's really struggling this year. But when those guys off the end get around, Patrick's not even stepping up. You know, he's taking the sack or throwing it as he gets hit. He's got to help him out a little bit. And then the line would be the third just because, you know, they are struggling. A sophomore Jay he's learning on the job, and it's going to be a rough first year at times for him, as it was last night.
So, you know, I think I can address why there's, you know, the air raid doesn't really look like an air raid, and I think it comes down to the blocking. Especially last night, it's hard for Kentucky to go vertical and take a five-step drop when Florida is getting pressure only rushing four guys. Tolles had to get the ball out of his hands as quickly as possible, and they had to leave an H-back or a running back there in the backfield to help with protection. I think Doss has said in his press conference after the game that, you know, you can't send out five guys to receive the ball because you have to keep some of them home to help protection. And I wonder, you know, if the offensive line is going to struggle with the pass rush this year, can Drew Barker do better than Tolles?
That's a good point. And the only thing I will counter with is if you're going to pack it in and then run it up the middle against a defensive line that is – made it clear we're not going to be able to have success, and they've dominated every team they played rushing. Granted, they haven't been played rushing juggernauts, but I feel like if you're going to be worried about the line, run screens, run slants, run quick hitters, but instead we're packing it in the middle and then running it in the middle. That's where a lot of my frustration comes in.
So James, talk to us. What do you think about that conversation? Let's say Drew Barker gets some playing time this week. Do you think that's what Kentucky should do, or do you think they should stick with Tolles?
It's a really hard question to answer right now. I want to give Tolles the benefit of the doubt. I want to see maybe if they can adjust if the line is going to keep struggling. One thing I noticed that Florida did with Greer last night, a lot of quick passes. He got the ball out of his hands. You know, with urgency, they set up a lot of plays where, you know, it's you know, just a couple steps and boom, the ball's out of his hands. The play is not going to take a long time to develop. Maybe try something like that where the line's not having to block as long, where the plays aren't developing downfield and Tolles doesn't have to wait and step into the pocket. You know, maybe adjust and try something like that. You know, if not, maybe, you know, then maybe give Barker a chance because, you know, there were just some passes last night that were high, that were behind, that were just off. And, you know, here's the question. If Barker is going to be that much better, possibly, wouldn't he have beaten Tolles out in camp? You know, did Tolles get the job because he started every game last year, or did Tolles – get the job because he's that much better than Barker? You know, I think that's the question. I think if Barker's more talented, then maybe we would have already seen him, or he would have beaten Tolles out in camp. You know,
that's
just my take on it.
No, see, that's kind of where I come down too. Is if Barker was better than Tolles, then he would have started. And I don't think the coaches are loyal to people just because they used to start. A great example is Fred Tiller. He was a 2-year starter, and now Chris Westry's starting over him. And J.D. Harmon's above him, too. I think it Tolles, the coaches made the assessment that Tolles is just better than Barker at the moment.
Here's my take on it in terms of trying to compare the two. I would imagine that Tolles looks better in practice. I would imagine he throws it better, he reads it better, he probably does everything better than Barker in practice. But, you know, I played baseball, and we had guys we called BP heroes. In batting practice, they were perfect. Opposite field, pulling it, hammering it. But when the game came on and the pitching was a live guy that was really good, they seemed to struggle. And I'm not saying Patrick's struggling, but he's not killing it. And he's, you know, he's been criticized for his pocket presence. He's been criticized for his not being able to see even a second receiver. And I'm not saying Barker is much better. I don't know. We haven't seen the guy play. But I have a feeling Barker is the kind of guy who's going to be a little bit more nasty, a little bit more aggressive, and a little bit less happy feet. He may not even throw better. I'm just wanting to see what we have. I'm not saying Barker is much better than Tolles. He may not be. They may line up side by side, and you'd probably pick Tolles 10 out of 10. But when the lights are on, I want to see what the kid has, just because we may have something that the team can rally around. You know, someone that's a true leader.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think – so, I don't know. If I was a coach and one player is better in practice, I think I'm just going to stick to the guy who proves himself in practice. But I don't know. Maybe there's something to be said about just switching things up, and maybe that will get Tolles to focus more. I mean, he's not gotten better so far this year. I thought he'd be better. I thought another offseason development would really be good for him. And it just it's not looking that way so far.
I don't think it's a matter of Tolles focusing. I think it's simply a matter of what's between his ears. I think he struggles with pressure. I think he struggles with his accuracy under that pressure. And, you know, for some reason, I don't know if Dawson has made it, you know, abundantly clear to never run, but how many times could he have stepped up and ran and got 10 to 15 yards? I know we don't want him running. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying we should run the read option with him. But he never runs anymore.
What do you guys think would be fair? Do you think, you know, let's see the first half against Missouri, what Tolles does, because, you know, Missouri's not a must-win game, but I think it would go far as, you know, okay, get the bad taste out of your mouth of Florida. We're 3-1 now, moving into Eastern, after Eastern, hopefully be 4-1, heading into a very winnable game against Auburn. So do we give Tolles, you know, the first half against Missouri, and if he struggles again, then second half against Missouri, maybe, you know, maybe we want to see Barker. Do you think you guys think that's fair or what?
I mean, I'm gonna assume Keith thinks that's fair. I kind of do too. The thing is, Missouri is gonna get good pass rush on us next week. We should just be prepared for that. And as Keith has said, Tolles, like a lot of quarterbacks, to be fair, they don't throw the ball well when they got 300-pound defensive linemen in their face. But, you know, when he's got a clean pocket, Tolles needs to be more consistent. Kentucky had two trips, I think, at first and goal two different times yesterday, and they walked away with 6 points. They need – one of those times, they need to get a touchdown. And – you know, the one that really stood out to me was he overthrew Blake Bone. Blake Bone beat his man Flint, and he just overthrew him. That's got to be a touchdown.
I agree, Will, on the fairness, and I would love to see, you know, Tolles should still be the starter, obviously. I'm not saying there should be a change. But I think either if we get up a couple scores or if it's clear that Patrick is struggling, maybe he throws another interception early like he's been doing, I think you give the kid a shot, a series or two, see what happens. If he's hot, you roll with it. If he's just pretty much the same, then you bring back Patrick and try to get him back on track.
Yeah.
It's so tough to do for the Missouri game because, you know, 3-1 versus 2-2 is literally probably going to be the difference between us being maybe 5-6 going into the Louisville game or 6-5. So that's a huge, huge difference. So it's tough to experiment on this game, but you're getting to a point where you almost have to at least look at something. And, you know, some people will say, well, hell, let them play a half in the Eastern game. What does that prove? You know, I could probably go out against Eastern and throw for 200 yards and a half because they're terrible. We're going to kill them. There's not going to be much to be learned against Eastern Kentucky. So it's a tough spot for Stoops because you want to see what the kid can do in SEC competition under the lights, and he's getting close to being put in a position where he's going to have to put him in one of the bigger games of the year.
Yeah. Do you guys
I think Missouri –
go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say I would think that the Missouri game is actually a pretty, you know, pretty good game to do this because, you know, if you guys watched Missouri yesterday, they're offensively they are bad. They had Matty Mock struggled against, you know, Connecticut, which isn't the greatest football team in the world, and then a true freshman quarterback came in and didn't fare much better, you know, so Mock was benched yesterday. I think Missouri is a good game because they're going to have their struggles with offense. I think our
we lost audio.
Yeah, cut off.
Sorry about that.
Oh, you're fine.
Sorry about that. But I just think that Missouri would be a good opportunity to see if maybe Barker is the answer if Toll struggles again. I think it's a good spot.
Yeah, if he struggles the first half, I'm coming around to the idea that you bring in Barker and give him a shot. I don't know. We'll see what happens. You know, I know a little bit about Missouri, not a lot, so don't quote me on this, but they have a pretty young secondary, and hopefully our receivers play better against that secondary than against Florida's, basically. Oh, I got.
Yeah.
All right, so is there any other final thoughts on the offense? If not, I was going to move to talking about the defense.
No, I love what Boone Williams is bringing to the table, and I love his enthusiasm. You know, he hit those big plays last night, and he got the crowd amped, and, man, I'd love to see him get the ball in his hands in space a lot more.
Yeah, that'll be my final thought, too. I think, like I said earlier, out of all the – positions on offense, I've been really pleased with our three running backs. You know, Horton had some decent runs yesterday. Boom, you know, he's a big play threat every time he gets the ball. And even JoJo Kemp, past two games, has had some big runs. And, you know, he's the one that got us down to the first red zone opportunity that we really had. And, you know, I just really excited about the way our running backs are playing, and I hope they get some more opportunities.
Agree completely. Running backs and Austin McGinnis are the most consistent players on the team, I think,
Yep. Games
into the season.
Yep.
Okay. So let's talk about the defense. They played well last night, right? They held Florida to 245 total yards, which is probably – I haven't looked this up, but it's probably the lowest total yards Kentucky's allowed to an SEC opponent since Vanderbilt last year, if that game was even that low. But overall – Kentucky's defense is ranked 11th in total defense in the SEC, which is exactly – the offense is also ranked 11th. So last night they played well. Do we think that is a product of the defense getting better or Florida's offense just being basically average at this point? Keith, why don't you go first?
I think it is a little of both. I know that's cliche to say, but Florida's not terrible. You know, Greer played well. They made fantastic catches. It could have been a lot less yardage without those shoestring catches. So I think it's a product of we do have a good defense. You know, Denzel Ware has been strong. Frankton Huguenin has, I think, two games now with seven tackles each. And we have, I think, a very rapidly improving SEC caliber defense. It's just a matter of reps and games and at bats, so to speak. So I love where they're going, and I think we almost have strength at every position now. You know, do we not? We've got strong, very strong safeties. McWilson with that touchdown saving play, you know, getting a fingertip on the ball. So I think it's probably 80% improvement and 20% Florida just not being, you know, a juggernaut on offense.
James?
Yeah, I agree. I think that our defense is improving. You know, C.J. Johnson had a great game last night. You know, he struggled a little bit against South Carolina. He came back, played really well. That secondary with, you know, Westry and J.D. Harmon and A.J. Stamps and Blake McLean, that's a really, really good secondary. I mean, McLean almost had an interception that could have been a pick six last night. You know, he just didn't look up at the right time. You know, J.D. Harmon with that touchdown-saving interception. Linebackers, Khalid Henderson, Josh Forrest, you know, Jabari Johnson, you know, even Jason Hatcher was in on some plays with his first game back yesterday. Hugan and Keith already mentioned him. I think it's a very, very solid defense. I think they're going to get better. Denzel Ware is, you know, I'm really, really excited about him. He's living up to the hype of a guy that was recruited by Florida State and, you know, backed out on that and came to Kentucky at the last minute. So, you know, I think there's some young studs on that defense that we really should be excited about. So it's improvement, and you know, with Jim McElwain, that Florida offense will get better. There's talent there. You know, Will Greer's he's going to be very, very good. And it says a lot about him that they kept Treon Harris, you know, on the sidelines, even though he did struggle at times. They had the faith that Greer, you know, was going to get the job done. And even when he was injured, you know, he had some shoulder pain, you know, fought through it and played well. So I think that guy's going to be good for a while at Florida. And they're going to get the athletes back on offense with their wide receivers, and they're going to be good. So I think it's a little bit of both, but mostly an improving defense on Kentucky's end.
Secondary is definitely better this year, right? I think we all agree on that. The passing defense ranks sixth in the SEC at the moment. And it's encouraging. Like, you talk about how McLean almost had a pick six. Florida's first series, A.J. Stamps almost had a pick, almost picked the ball off, and that would have been an easy only a touchdown, too. So there were some moments that, I mean, the game was a one-score game and could have turned on its head so easily multiple times. Like, where I talk about how Kentucky came up empty in the red zone twice, first and goal. And then those two pick sixes could have easily happened as well. Like you guys, I've been really impressed with Ware. I was worried about the outside linebackers coming into the season, but without Hatcher there, Ware and Jabari Johnson both played really well. Khalid Henderson is playing so much better, an inside linebacker on the weak side, to the point that I was going to write about this next week if it was actually an issue. But I'm thinking they should redshirt Ryan Flanagan. If he can't play for Missouri, just throw him. He shouldn't play this year. Let him come back next year after Josh Forrest and Khalid Henderson graduate, and let him be one of the starting guys next year. I'm still not sold on the defense. I think passing defense is strong, but I want to see more consistency. Missouri's offense is not very good. I think it's the worst in the SEC. So they should do well next week. I want to see Auburn's also poorly ranked offensively. They should do well against them. It's when we start playing Mississippi State and Georgia, Tennessee. I want to see them perform in those games because that's when I'll know if the defense has gotten better or not. I think they're at a level where if they play an average offense, they're going to look pretty good. But I don't know yet if they, when they play a good offense, if then they'll play well. I don't know. We'll have to see, I guess. At least that's my take.
I think that's fair. You know, Louisiana Lafayette has a pretty decent offense. South Carolina, man, oh, man, did they just get destroyed. They got carpet bombed by Georgia yesterday. So I don't think their offense is all that great. Florida's is young and improving. But, no, I think it's a fair take. I let's see what they do against the big boys, Georgia, Tennessee. Well, Tennessee's not a big boy, but they're supposedly pretty talented on offense. So, yeah, I like the wait-and-see approach, but you're right. Missouri has a really bad offense. They should tee off next week.
One of the things I look at for the defense and know that there's significant improvement is how many times over the years during a game did you say, how in the hell is that guy that open? You know, where is our defense? And you don't see that much. You know, I think there was one occurrence last night where a guy was wide open and we closed so quickly he only got a couple yards after the catch. That is the measure of, you know, we're always with somebody. We're always with their man. You know, have we got burnt deep for a touchdown this year? I can't recall.
Maybe Louisiana? I don't think so, though.
No, I don't
think so. Not that I recall.
Deep at all. And you, when's the last time that's happened in three games with Kentucky football? So I like the idea, and I think you're right on, Will. I think that we're good enough to probably look very good against average teams, but, you know, when Nick Chubb comes to town, luckily we don't have to play Leonard Fournette, but, you know, I'd like to see what we're going to do against the big boys.
Yeah, and, you know, touching on that idea of giving up big plays, last year against Florida, DeMarcus Robinson went for 215 yards. Guess how much he had last night?
Zero.
16.
Okay.
16. So that was obviously in the game plan, and I was concerned about the Florida's tight ends having a big day because South Carolina's tight end had a big day against Kentucky. Jake McGee had 3 catches for 30 yards. That's pretty good. Yeah, there's encouraging signs on the defense. I'll give it that, but I still want to do a little more wait and see. Is there any closing thoughts on the defense? Because there's some other things I was going to talk to. I wanted to get Keith's impression on some other stuff, on game atmosphere. You guys have any closing thoughts on defense?
I'm covered.
Okay. So, Keith, you were at the game last night.
Yep.
Talk to us. Tell us. Talk about the atmosphere. What was it like in the tailgate? What was it like in the press booth, the fans? Just like, what did you think of not only the atmosphere from a fan's perspective, the fans, but like how Kentucky sort of like ran the night, managed the game, all that sort of stuff?
It was perfect, and it was one of the more special atmospheres I've ever been to. The tailgating was a little weird. I think because of the weather, people came out a little later. I was there pretty early, around 3 o'clock, and you know, my buddy had his set up, and I was hanging out with them. And there was a lot of people there, but it wasn't, you know, rabid. It wasn't ransacking people. It was just busy. But when you get into the stadium, I think it was a late-arriving crowd, not into the stadium, but to the just to the tailgates, man, it was unlike anything I've experienced. I don't think I was supposed to go onto the field before the game, but I kind of owned it like I was like I was official, and she let me go through. But I walked around the field. I was just, you know, there were so many recruits there. Tim Couch was there, a lot of former stars. It was just a weird feeling. It felt special. The students were there earlier than anybody. I'd say the student section was filled up 90% 30 minutes before the game started. And the players were dancing. It was just – it was awesome. You know, and the press box is pro level. It is just an awesome experience to be up there. A lot of fun. You know, my spot is right beside Freddie Maggard, so it's cool to get his takes during the game. And he left pissed, I'll tell you. But he was he's great to have beside, because the things you chat about are football related. And then what I did this time is, you know, in the press box, it's sealed. You can barely hear the action unless it is loud. So I didn't want to miss what was going to happen in the pregame. So I had a buddy who has season tickets right below the press box, and I just went and hung out there. And I posted, you know, some of the videos of the players running out, the pregame video that they had, and people were losing their minds. It was special. Everything pointed toward one of those crazy nights that usually only happen in March in Lexington. We just couldn't finish it. And I think that's part of my dejection today, is that everything seemed to be in place. Everything was working right. It was going to be special. People were going to remember this night for a long time, and we literally dropped the ball.
Yeah. No, that's definitely disappointing. James, are you going to make it to any games this year?
Yeah, we already have tickets to the Louisville game in November, so that one I'm going to for sure. I'm thinking about going for EKU in 2 weeks, so I want to go to two, but I'll be there for sure for one, and that Louisville game should be pretty live, I'd say.
Yeah, I'd say the Louisville game will be a lot like last night.
Yeah.
It would be interesting if Louisville is 5-6 like we were last year, and they're playing to make it to a bowl game. That would be interesting.
They're trending in that direction.
Yeah,
I would love to see us be 6-5, them 5-6, and us win and go to a much better bowl game, and then they go home. That would be my dream scenario.
It's pretty unreal how big a difference your bowl game is if you win 7 games instead of 6.
Yeah.
That's like the difference between you're in Shreveport on December 15th or you're in Tampa on New Year's Day.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Nobody wants to go to Shreveport in the middle of December. All right, so I kind of want to wrap this up with a general thought. There's a lot of frustration today in BDM. If you're anything like me, you kind of have this twisted personality where you like to, or I like to go to message boards and see people freak out. I don't know why I do that, but yeah. If anything, it's therapeutic for me because I'm like, well, at least I'm not this nuts. Not naming anyone in particular. Do you think Kentucky fans are largely really frustrated because some of them thought this team was capable of winning 7 or 8 games or 9 games? Or is it just like sort of like general knee-jerk fan reaction that we all do?
I think it's a combination of both things, really, because, you know, I think this fan base is hungry for a winning football team. They want it, like he said last night, it's evident with the crowd and the reaction and just the way that they're coming out in droves to see this team. And I think they need to manage expectations a little bit. Yeah, the team's improved, but it's still a work in progress. These guys are really, really young. And, you know, it is a knee-jerk reaction as far as anytime you lose a game, you know, your first thoughts are always going to be negative. Even on the ride home last night from my buddy's house where I watched a game, you know, I calmed down. By the time I got home, I was back to being positive and positivity to where I'm like, okay, put it behind us, beat Missouri 3-1, beat AKU 4-1, you know, much better position. In all honesty, guys, you know, how many people really, really thought we would come out of the first 3-game stretch 3-0? You know, a lot of people thought we might be 1-2 and not 2-1. So, you know, I think we came out ahead in this 3-game stretch. Let's see what we do in the next 3-game stretch. You know, I just hope that the atmosphere for Missouri on a Saturday night is like the atmosphere last night against Florida. I hope fans don't start abandoning just because of one close home loss to Florida. You know, they deserve our support and our enthusiasm. If we want a winning football team, and we all do, we need to keep supporting it, you know, until it happens.
One thing I want to add on the atmosphere is the catwalk. I went over to it, and it was 7, 8, 9 people deep. I mean, they packed that thing. It was probably the biggest catwalk we've had, and you could feel the excitement. As far as fans go, here's my take on it. Now, I live in Knoxville, so after Tennessee loses, one of my favorite things is to listen to Tennessee sports radio because people they lose their mind. And I'm not kidding you when I say that people were talking about Butch Jones should probably not necessarily be fired, but they would magically like for him to go somewhere else so that a better coach can take over his talent because he's built them up, but he's not going to take him any further. One caller said we need a Southern guy. He doesn't get Southern football. I mean, you talk about knee-jerk, moronic. That made me feel better last week. But from a Kentucky fan perspective, how many Kentucky fans, percentage-wise, would you say are true football, rabid UK football fans? I'm guessing it's 25, 1-4. The rest are rabid basketball fans. And when you have the basketball team we do and you expect excellence, you expect, you know, number one, when you win your first 2 games, all of a sudden you're thinking, well, hell, we could go 12-0. And it's irrational and it's crazy, but it's the Kentucky basketball mentality. And I think 75% of those fans transfer that to their football feeling when they see that we won 2 games, and it's a knee-jerk reaction to losing a game. That, truth be told, we should be 2-1 right now. When you looked at the season, if anybody was going to predict us 3-0 right now, I would have called them an idiot, and I wear blue goggles. So I think we're in great shape. You know, the Missouri game is the big one for me. You know, I said it was the biggest game of the year, and I stand by that. I think it's the difference in us going to Shreveport or Tampa. So I love where we are as a program. I have my normal concerns, but what you're seeing on message boards is just knee-jerk Kentucky basketball mentality, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, it's like this is something that I struggle with. I get frustrated with Kentucky fans, some Kentucky fans, a segment of Kentucky fans, when they just expect quick turnarounds. Like, football is not basketball. There are 5 guys playing basketball. There's you know, it's 18-year-old five stars can turn a program around instantly. Like, look at, you know, there's obviously various examples out there, Kentucky being one of them, like in Cal's first year here. Like, football doesn't work that way. It's a grind. You can't just have five stars. You got to have multiple blue chips, and then also have their backups be blue chips to compete for national titles. And if you're in the SEC, you need that to make bowl game. It's a process, and quick turnarounds just don't happen. So I get frustrated when Kentucky fans think this team is underachieving. When I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, our biggest playmakers are sophomores. I don't know. I could go on.
I agree, guys. I mean, like you said, you go from NIT with Billy Gillespie to the next year, you have John Calipari coming with John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, and Eric Bledsoe, and then you're in the Elite Eight, and you're the number one overall seed. Like you said, Will, it doesn't happen in football. There's so many variables that go into football teams. There's so many guys. You know, instead of having, you know, 10, 12 players on a team, you know, you've got triple that. It's just, it's insane to think that, you know, Mark Stoops gets it done in year two or year three. You know, we won two games his first year, five games last year. You win six or maybe seven this year. That's real progress. That's a success rate with the trajectory going upward. So, yeah, if they have there's fans out there that need to. I got into a little bit with a guy on Twitter last night that, you know, called out Patrick Toles on Twitter, and I'm like, dude, you know, leave the kid out of it. He doesn't need you, you know, from your couch telling him he did a bad job. You know, we can talk about, you know, mistakes he made or whatever, but these kids are working their tails off, and so are the coaches.
Yeah,
you know, it's ridiculous. Some of these fans just they fly off the handle because we lost to Florida by less than a touchdown. So, you know, it's insane.
Those guys that tweeted the players are the worst.
Yes, they're the worst.
I'm even hesitant to tweet at a player a good thing, much less anything.
Yes.
And when I see a guy or even a girl coming at a player on Twitter, you know, I want to say, you know, you should disappear from this planet. You're an idiot. You're the worst kind of person there is.
Yeah, no, wow. I mean, the type of person – so I just imagine some overweight, middle-aged man sitting on his couch telling Patrick Toles that he's a terrible quarterback. And just – I want to see that dude transformed into Patrick Toles' shoes and taking snaps under center from shotgun, trying to diagnose a defense, and then make a throw in a tight window. I mean, people who do that are ridiculous. You're right. Disappear. Just disappear.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said to him. I was like, man, I didn't see you out there taking any snaps or taking any hits. So, you know, what business do you have to tell Patrick Toles what kind of job he did he didn't do it to his face. Obviously, if Patrick Toles was staying in the room and he said, go ahead, tell Patrick Toles what you think of him, he wouldn't have said anything. But, you know, you get behind your computer screen or on your phone and, you know, you've got a little bit – you're a little bit braver than you would be if you're talking to Toles face-to-face.
Keyboard warriors, man. There are a ton of them out there.
Yeah.
You know, this is a slightly different take, but another thing that I want to touch on is how do you guys – what do you guys think about the media coverage, specifically the media, like the local media covering Kentucky so far this season? I think some of the blogs, not naming names, they've been very enthusiastic about the team and have inflated expectations. And I think they've been successful doing so, and to a certain extent, more traditional forms of media like the Herald Leader and the Courier Journal, they've also been pumping some sunshine leading into Florida game a little bit. Do you think that has led to fans having outsized expectations, or am I off? Like, Keith, like, you tell me, Keith, like, what do you think about the media coverage so far this season, and do you think it's been, like, a little too lazy?
It's been a little sunshine pumping, but I still think that it's vastly the mindset of the fan that's mostly Kentucky basketball and is enjoying the football success. I really do think it's more that mindset than sunshine pumping, but
But it does perpetuate it. You know, anytime you see a positive article about the team, you're going to have your expectations go up a little bit.
Yeah. James, what do you think? I know, James, you pay attention to the media quite a bit from what I take Twitter feed. Like, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. Even take, for instance, yesterday, College Game Day, Kirk Herbstreit, Lee Corso, and Desmond Howard all picked Kentucky to win to beat Florida. You know, what those guys say on game day, everybody automatically, oh, yeah, those are the experts, they know. So even I was excited. I was like, oh, man, you know, I respect the opinion of these individuals. They think Kentucky's improved. They kept talking about Patrick Toles and how he's one of the better quarterbacks in the SEC. So it's not even local media. There's a national media backing of Kentucky, it seems, right now. There's high expectations everywhere. I don't know. It's a tough spot because I think that we all believe that it's getting better, and I think it is getting better. But at the same time, let's let it play out a little more, okay? It's only three games in. Some of the local media, you know, they do it because they want people to read their articles and to click on their websites. Positivity is going to do that more than negativity, I guess, unless it's just a gang mentality of let's just beat up on, you know, Coach, you know, Joker Phillips or Billy Gillespie. But, you know, to a certain extent, they're pumping up the positivity. I don't remember, except for our own Jason Markham on the Sea of Blue roundtable, you know, he was the only one that picked Kentucky to lose to Florida on the roundtable question on that. So I think it's not just the media. I think overall as a fan base, we're really positive, and we're hyping the team up ourselves because, you know, we just believe that they're better, and I think they are better, but maybe not to that extent yet.
No, James, I think you raised two really good points, and I want to highlight those. You're right. National media also piggybacked on Kentucky beating Florida. So, I was wrong. I'm wrong to bash local guys too much because, hell, national guys are doing it too. And the other thing you point out is positivity gets more clicks than negativity. If you write a post that talks about how great Anthony Davis is or how great Patrick Toles is playing, that's going to get a lot more shares on Facebook and retweets on Twitter than, you know, Billy Gillespie is garbage sort of post, right? I guess, like, what I struggle with is I want our fan base to be a little more savvy. I want them to be like, you know what? I'm not going to click on this one Kentucky blogger's post because he says how great Boom Williams is. Like, I want them to click on it because there's actual information in it, or, you know, some objectivity. I don't know. I struggle with this. It's probably not interesting to anyone but myself, I guess.
Well, James, you hit on a great point about the national media. Was it Dennis Dodd last year who predicted Kentucky to win the East? It wasn't Dennis Dodd. But you remember that guy? Somebody, when we were 5-1, said Kentucky was going to win the East, and I think he was with CBS or...
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it was Dodd.
It was Dodd. So, I mean, how can the fan base not get unrealistic expectations? Now, should we have lost the last six? No. But if we would have went 2-4, I would have considered that a wild success. And, you know, I think some fans really bought into, well, we got a chance to win the East, and we didn't. We lost our six games, so we really crapped the bed. So Stoops, is he really that good? When really the fact of the matter is, you know, those last six games, I don't know if we were the better team in many of them. It's just there's a lot of – you're right. There's a lot of perpetuating of positivity and sunshine pumping, and it gets you pumped. I mean, I'm one of the – I'll fall for it sometimes. I'll admit it. I get too deep. I mean, hell, last year I predicted us to go 7-5. This year I backed it up a little bit and stuck with 7-5 instead of saying 8. But I'm kind of right there, and I try to be as objective as I can. So I can imagine Billy Joe Wildcat – you know, when they hear a national media guy, you know, all four of the SEC network guys picked Kentucky too. So you had 8 experts picking it. And what's funny is you don't mess with Vegas. Wasn't our first line -4.5 Florida? Yeah. We lose by 5. So, you know, what happened last night is probably what was supposed to happen. But everybody gets caught up in the hype, and it turns into knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah. James?
And also to put things in perspective, I think it was either Deadspin or an SB Nation website, I can't remember which, had an article this morning about Alabama fans reacting to the loss to Ole Miss last night, saying that, you know, they expect championships every year in Alabama and Nick Saban can't get it done, and just going off on Saban. And I was like, are you serious? It was absolutely insane. It was like kind of like Kentucky basketball fans with John Calipari 2 years ago when they were an 8 seed and, you know, went to the national championship game. They were writing that team off. Cal can't get it done anymore, and it's the same thing with Alabama football fans and Nick Saban. So at least Kentucky football fans aren't that spoiled. I think we're a little more realistic than that. I think part of that is because we haven't had a lot of success. So when we do lose, instead of just, you know, completely trashing our coaches and players, you know, as an entire fan base, there's a few that do that. I think it's just kind of more like, you know, oh well, you know, maybe we'll get them next year. So at least we don't have the Alabama fan mentality when it comes to losing games.
Yeah. Well, guys, we've gone a pretty long time, longer than we usually do. Is there anything else you guys want to touch on, bring up?
I guess my only last thing is I think it was in the first podcast we did that Keith brought up whether or not this is going to be make or break year for Ryan Timmons, but again, not to single a kid out, but he just wasn't a factor again last night. I'm really starting to think, is he getting buried on the depth chart? I hope not. I think he's got a lot of talent, and I hope they figure out a way to utilize him more. He figures out a way to insert himself more into the game. So, you know, we'll see. I'm really rooting for the kid.
Yeah, just to throw in here real quickly, Ryan Timmons is averaging 1 catch per game. He has 3 for the year.
Wow.
Jeez.
Dorian Baker with 11. Garrett Johnson with 10 receptions. Jeff Badette, 6. Blake Bone, 5. And then Boom Williams, and then Ryan Timmons. Now, those are receptions, so I haven't looked at the targets. So he might be targeted more, but it's hard to imagine he's being targeted more than Badette, Baker, Johnson.
No, I don't think he's being targeted more. Of those 3 catches, I would say he probably has 5 or 6 targets is all.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. But he is averaging 19 yards per catch, so that's somewhat encouraging. We'll see. We could probably have our entire podcast talking about Ryan Timmons. Really interesting how a kid goes from leading, basically led a team of receptions, he was first or second. In 2013, he was second. 2014, he was first. And then this year, he's like an afterthought. I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah.
Keith, talk to us. Any closing thoughts?
No, I love where we are. I think that we win next week, and I think we win the week after that and go 4-1 into Auburn, and everything's back to normal and hunky-dory. My only concern is Toll's going to, you know, get back to the way he was his first 4 games of his career, or is it going to be more of the same? That's really my only concern with the team right now. That, and, you know, Dawson's going to get it. He's going to get into an operating rhythm where he knows what he's calling and he's not sticking to one thing. So I think that's just a matter of time, but that's it. I love where we are. I think we've got a, you know, young, burgeoning defense, and we've got talent. It's just a matter of, you know, can we win the games we're supposed to?
Yeah. You know what? Your 7-5 prediction is still possible.
Yeah.
It can happen. Well, guys, this has been, I think, if nothing else, therapeutic for me, working through my feelings from last night. I want to thank everybody for listening. If you made it this far, we definitely appreciate it. And we'll do more of these in the future, as always. All right, thanks.